Japan 2.0.
Tell me where you want to go.
You see me on your television. You hear me on your radio. You like it where your eyes.
But tell me where you want to go.
Japan 2.0.
Tell me where you want to go.
2.2.2.2. Point.
Hello and welcome to Japan 2.0, where we are having the last Hanami of 2017, probably, at Utsuba Park. Matt and I just had an awesome What I Love About Japan moment. What happened to us, Matt?
Well, we were out at the park, and everybody's eating, you know, they brought food and barbecue and all this stuff.
Everyone's prepared,
beer,
we're not prepared.
And wine. And,
but you don't need to be prepared, why?
Because the 7-Eleven guy was walking around the park, in the whole 7-Eleven uniform,
yeah.
And he had a whole list of sets. Like
go orders.
Yeah. And so we got
He's the third person to approach us. We had a Pizza Hut guy, a local, like, Italian restaurant pizza guy. Come and try to like bring us food from the restaurants.
Pizza Hut brought a flyer and they said we could order pizzas half off today.
This guy was incredible. Everyone has been really friendly and actually like really, really nice. But I think Matt and I are suckers for the combini because we know, you go back and listen to that episode, we know the value for your buck. And for $20, we can't even finish half of what we were given.
Oh man, it's just like fried chicken and fried
a ton of it,
like French fries,
20 pieces, and French fries, kimchi,
and then for service they gave us
two packages of ham, like deli meat ham you put on a sandwich,
and then a packet of imitation crab,
two crab packets of imitation
crab. Oh yeah, two packages.
And kimchi. That just fell on me.
Hey, you got kimchi on your pants.
So we ordered beers, two beers, a ton of chicken, that fried chicken that we can't eat, and French fries. $20 and got all that extra meat and stuff on the side, and they brought it and delivered it to us here. We paid here and everything.
It's an amazing Hanami experience.
Yes. So Hanami and delivery at the Hanami, this isn't something you normally would get at a park here. It's just because there's more people than normal. But yeah, the vibe here is very, very good right now, right?
Yeah.
Tons of laughter, people just having a good time and being loud, and you know, anyone who says that, yeah, this is a normal, but all those stereotypes about Japan are kind of being broken right now about being this quiet place, you know.
It's a true Japanese experience.
Yeah.
And speaking of true Japanese experiences, yes. We have a very special episode today because we're going to talk about one of our favorite pieces of Japanese gaming history.
Yep.
And contemporary gaming history as well.
Still going on strong. You know, I think the finest of the games has been just released, which is usually the opposite.
It's a game that's had a big influence on both David and I. And we're hoping to make this kind of a bit of a series. We have a couple of video games that we think that, like, anybody who listens to Japan 2.0 would be interested in, even if you're not interested in video games.
Yeah, it's a subject I've wanted to handle very delicately because we always talk about there's a lot of competition is not the right word, but there's a lot of people out there doing stuff about Japan, and gaming is obviously probably like the number one, you know, maybe two behind anime. And so we want to think of our own unique approach to that, not to mention I think a lot of our audience and what they come here for isn't like to hear about a video game review. So this is not, you know, a big video game review or talking really hardcore about gaming, at least in this first segment, this first half. We're trying to just show how games, and in this series, Persona, embody, like, Japanese mindset and philosophy and what it's like to live here, just as analyzing a painting or a book
or a
song would. I think you can look at video games, certain video games, Persona is one of those, and we have about three or four other series that we're thinking of doing. And if you don't like games and you wonder, like, what's this whole Japanese game thing about that so many people are crazy about, I really think that this would sell it to you, or you kind of be able to understand it. You know, that's kind of my goal, is we have a lot of friends who don't play games or a lot of listeners, and in these first segments that's what I want to do. And then in the second segment, stick around if you want to hear more about, like, how these games actually work and the mechanics and more of the kind of hardcore gaming stuff. But Persona, you know, what is it?
Well, it's a video game series. It's a kind of a sub-series of a even more niche game series called the Shin Megami Tensei games.
Yep.
And the Shin Megami Tensei games are kind of always known for being very dark and gothic.
Yeah,
kind of.
Pretty hardcore. A casual gamer wouldn't really play these games.
Yeah. It's very, very Japanese series. And in fact, the first couple of games, or actually probably the first dozen or so games, weren't even released in the United States. The games that we're going to mostly be focused on have releases, English translations.
And they're an offshoot of that series. And this, I think Persona is more popular now than Shin Megami Tensei.
Oh, definitely. Persona is definitely their flagship title. Mm. Yeah.
And so, like, what kind of game is Persona? What do you do? Why are we talking about it over other games?
I mean, just a general overview. The Persona is an RPG. It's a JRPG, turn-based RPG, which basically means you take your turn, you choose what to do to fight enemies. But the thing that's most interesting, and I think most important, is it is a game that takes place in a Japanese city or Japanese town or Japanese school. Well, they all take place in Japanese schools.
Yep.
But and it's kind of like a life simulator in a lot of ways.
Very much so, yeah. There's two halves to the game, and we're going to focus on one half in this first part because it speaks more to a casual person who doesn't really maybe play a lot of games or who wants to live in Japan and can't be here. And Matt and I will talk a bit, but this is the first Persona we've been playing that we're actually living in Japan, and the experience is a little bit different. And that first half is, like you said, a Japan simulator, really a relationship simulator in Japan.
Yeah, it's more appropriate.
The main idea is that you kind of have these certain time slots of your day, generally like a morning, an afternoon, and a night, but there's some variation there, and you have to choose how to spend your time. And they put you in a setting. One is in Persona 4, is in the countryside. The one 5 that just came out is in Tokyo, Shibuya. And you get to choose how to spend your time, and you're really living in the city. And the cities are accurately portrayed. Now, some games are fake cities. This one, 5, is a real city. But if you've ever been to Japan, whether it's the countryside or Tokyo, it's very obvious right away that they've really captured that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the things that you do in your daily life in Japan, you do in Persona. And you might not be a high school student like the Persona kids, but more likely than not, you have a tatami bedroom or a tatami room in your house or your apartment, and you spend a lot of time there, you know, in the game where you're eating dinners or cooking dinners or making lunches.
Or you have to take the subway and look at like a subway map and realize how to transfer in a station.
Yeah, I was lost in the video game when I first started playing Persona 5 because the subway systems are almost as confusing as
real life.
Or
you got to get a part-time job or a job and get a job magazine or all these things, you know. Yeah, they're watered down a bit in the game, but just the smallest little things and the details, and ticket machines in the subways look exactly as they do, and they're placed in the right locations. And
Places, the bento places, the convenience stores, all that stuff looks like what you have in a Japanese city. You know, Juness is a good example.
Yeah, the grocery store.
It's a grocery store.
Plays the same 30-second song over and over again, just like the grocery stores do here. Just these small little things that I think Japan 2.0 we're all about is like these nuances of Japanese life and capturing those. I think this is a game that really does that. And there's a series of games that, you know, drew Matt and I into Japan, and again, once we got kind of bored of all those other big aspects of Japan that draw most people in, what more is there to learn about this place when you're not living here? I think playing games like Persona were a really good way to figure out what it was like to live in Japan. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but like I was just thinking, like, can you think of any parallels from Western gaming, like that, where they take
Grand Theft Auto to a different degree or a different scale? It's almost in the opposite scale of Grand Theft Auto, right?
But don't you think it's like a little more generic? Like the little things aren't as. I mean,
Grand
Theft Auto does a good
job.
What I'm
saying
is a grand scale
view of America society. Those games go pretty deep. The more recent ones really are saying something about America in general and the society.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's on a big scale where Persona's on a small scale.
I mean, the parts of the cities. So like in most Persona games, you only spend time in like four or five different locations, maybe. Mm. And you spend a lot of time in those locations, but they're the detail is painstakingly, like, put,
accurate.
You know, yeah, accurate. And all of the, I can't think of any other, like, any, yeah, why, like, the creators have so much pride in, like, their Japanese cities or the places that they came from. And I think that that's kind of one of those really unique things about the Persona series that, yeah, I haven't really experienced in Western games.
Yeah, I think that's true. Right now, on a small scale, the nuances are like almost a simulator of living in a Western society. No, I can't. I think it's a good time to kind of transition into us now living here. I wondered, like, I've lived here for a while. Is that appeal still going to be there? Like, why would I play this game? Where it could be seen as mundane, right? Having a part-time job or
taking
the subway or whatever. And I guess for me, I had that connection of before Japan and playing the same style of game. Where now that I live here, I've gotten numb to a lot of the cool things about Japan, or sometimes I'm ungrateful. And then seeing it in the game again and thinking about how I would have thought of that before, then it's made me go out and kind of, like, look at things around me. Just the small shops owned by, like, grandmas and grandpas, you know, or the little shrines in every corner, or even something as simple as vending machines being everywhere. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, it would be so fun to be in Japan and just try all the different drinks. And part of me thinks that's silly now that I've lived here. Like, yeah, big deal, whoop-de-doo. But playing a game like that and seeing those things I can remember from that old perspective has now made me go out in my own life and kind of, like, look at Japan again with new eyes. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I mean, totally. Like, when I'm playing the game, like, right now I'm currently playing Persona 5. I haven't finished it or anything. But as I'm playing it, like, I want... ramen, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I want, like, the food that I've seen. I've been to the vending machine probably more than I have in the last couple of months.
The game,
you know,
like, as you go in there, you know, they have, like Matt said, the music and the visuals and just the things people say when you enter the shop. And it will just be like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Or, that's right down the street from me. Like, why am I doing this in the game? I should go do that.
I could just come outside, yeah.
That's awesome. And, yeah. the game is so stylish, too. That's the thing we haven't talked on yet. We'll get on the art style, because that's probably, like, one of the major appeals. But it's so stylish that it makes things look so cool, you know? And that kind of gets you to want to go out there and experience it, you know? It does a good job of selling Japan to you, even though you're here already. And kind of the cool, stylish, funky side.
Before I came out to Asia, I played my first Persona game. It was Persona 3.
That's my first one, too. Yeah.
And as I was playing it, I was like, man, I was going through college, and I kind of had an idea that when I graduated, I would try to travel in Asia. But, that, I mean, it solidified my, you know, my resolve. You know, I really wanted to graduate while I was playing this game, because I thought, like, wow, it would be so awesome just to go down the street, like, just out of my apartment building and get something from the vending machine.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it's one of those games where, yeah, it simulates Japanese life more accurately than, like, I mean, most games simulate anything, you know? Like, I mean, I don't know, you're right, it does seem mundane, but it makes the mundane things interesting.
Yeah, and we'll kind of get into that, I think, in the second half, when we're talking about, like, the mechanics and the way the game works and what you're supposed to do in the game. But yeah. So I think the other big things to talk about in this first segment are, yeah, just the general art style and the style of the game. And then secondly would be, like, I guess the kind of, like, philosophies or way of life, or what can you learn about Japan from this game? Maybe the art style we should talk about first?
Well, yeah, art styles is incredible, actually. Yeah.
Mainly talking about Persona 3, 4, and 5. I don't think we've played in any of the previous ones, either of us. And the game kind of really took off or became more developed with those 3, 4, and 5s.
Yeah.
The style was, like, the thing that it was known for. And yeah, how would you describe the Persona style?
I would say it looks a lot like... it's anime or... manga, you know. I mean, it's very Japanese style designs, but it's a lot more.
Hate 95% of manga and anime style, as I've said on the show before.
Yeah, but
so why is it good anime or manga style?
It's kind of hard to categorize, but I would say that the art style is very. It's very distinct. It's very like consistent throughout the whole game, and it's usually based in certain colors. So each of the Persona games, like their theme is like a certain color.
Third one had a blue. Fourth one is yellow. This one's red.
Yeah, and then
they're
also
very vibrant colors.
Yeah,
and like thick black lines, right?
Yeah, very sleek. I would say sleek character designs. Like all the characters look very like attractive. I guess attractive.
They're
in
all
a,
really lanky. Tall,
yeah,
skinny.
In a long, tall, skinny like. And it's not just because David and I are tall and skinny,
yeah.
But we like it. But it's just it's a very evocative design, and the monster designs and stuff are all very creative, and they're all from the previous like Shin Megami Tensei games. Like all your enemies that you come across are usually from recycled characters from previous games,
from previous games,
Dragon Quest, and
but
stuff.
They're very unique, like. Inside themselves, right?
Oh,
so, I mean,
man,
if you compare
really?
It to other series, it doesn't seem Tolkien-esque or like where a lot of people draw their influences from. When I see a Persona design, I'm like, that's Persona, you know?
Yeah.
They're kind of psychedelic, the monsters sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes grotesque. Slightly grotesque.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess for me, the characters are just really stylish. Like, the main character, Persona 3, I still think is, like, one of the coolest character designs. Like, I think, I want to, like, dress like that or get my hair like that guy, you know? And I guess, yeah, it's just hip and stylish. And the music... Yeah, go ahead.
It's unapologetic. The art design is... Because, I mean, really, like, this game could easily be, like, anime the game. It could have, like, they could have, you know, the huge anime eyes and the... You know, the moe faces and stuff like that. But, and especially as the series has gotten more popular over the years, I could see, like, them actually going that way to try to get,
the
like, a bigger audience.
The previous series, I think,
you know?
Part of the reason Persona 4 was probably the peak of their popularity so far was the anime was so successful based off the game.
But the designs and stuff haven't changed.
That's
like,
right,
I mean, Persona's design choices, they're not contemporary, like, Japanese character designs
right,
and stuff.
Right. I know we're not doing a great job at saying, like, why. I guess you can just Google in 2 seconds Persona and see it. But, yeah, they're different. You know, they're a bit brash, a bit in your face.
Yeah.
A bit dark, and I don't want to use emo as a weird term, but, like, the characters are kind of, like...
I feel
a bit,
yeah.
A bit, you know, I don't know how to
it's
put
not,
it.
It's not goth. But there are gothic kind of like
when I would go to like overtones. A lot of like shows like punk shows and stuff when I was in high school at that time in like early 2000s a lot of the characters looked like people I would go see at those shows still today, you know, like
yeah. I would say if you're a fan of The Matrix too, there's that bit of atmosphere, that is similar atmosphere, at least from the first Matrix movie.
Yeah.
But like things have like a haze to them, and characters like that are long and sleek, and character designs, costumes and clothes and stuff, you know, lots of leather, lots of you know, like school uniforms and stuff.
Yeah, and that we'll talk about a bit next. It, you know, kind of really embodies Japanese society and culture. The music is a huge part for me. In this latest game, for me, the music is the weakest of the latter games. But generally, there's a bit of like a jazzy, hip-hop, electronic vibe. A little bit of rock in there, too. Overall, 3, 4, and 5. I think 5 is heaviest maybe on the jazz. 3 was heaviest on the hip-hop. 4 is like a mix of those two. But, yeah, the music, there's a lot of different songs in the game. It's not, like, just the same song over and over. Although, like, when you're fighting, which we'll get to later, they do play the same song over and over. And that's the one that gets caught in your head the most. And you might get sick of it at certain points.
I think we should put in clip of the Persona 4, like, battle theme here. You know,
you know
you get an idea, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good. That's a good
for me, that's one of my more favorite tracks of the game. Again, some songs are better than others, but it is known for its music.
I think that even in Persona 5, like I do agree with you. I actually think this is the weakest soundtrack. And I'm a pretty big jazz fan, but I think that...
It's subdued, this one.
It's not
brash and in your face. It doesn't match the art style. The art style is so crazy and wild, and the music is just so, like, chill.
I think what they were trying to do is, like, because your main character is a thief, they were trying to do a Lupin the Third kind of vibe and missed the mark just a little bit. But I still think that the music in this game fits the mood more often than it doesn't.
Yeah, and it's not bad. It's just, like, I'm not ever finding myself, like, humming the music or singing it in my head. In the previous two games, I was like, just couldn't get those songs out of my head, you know?
Yeah. There's no earworm like there was in Persona 3 and Persona 4. But I mean, I think all of the soundtracks are totally unique for Japanese video games and video games in general. I mean, when was the last time you played any video game and there was a jazz soundtrack? You know?
Yeah,
I mean, sure. You got to commend them for trying something new things, that's different, you know? I think that the soundtracks have been so successful on their own that there's been a spin-off
series, the
live concerts.
Yeah.
But there was a Vita game based all. It was a rhythm game about about the music from Persona 4.
If you're not super into games, it was like Guitar Hero minus the guitar, where you just like tap on the screen when the little icons came down. The music is very well known, which kind of leads us into like overall, like this game really captures the pulse of Japan. I think Japanese youth in general and like Shibuya culture, and this game particularly.
Yeah.
But I think overall it has that Shibuya culture. I think a lot of the games we're going to be talking about in these future series kind of all come back to you, which is like the funky
Harajuku style.
Funky, artsy, kind of underground, do-it-yourself aesthetic, a bit rocker, a little tiny bit of hip-hop thrown in there.
And a little bit of goth, you know?
Yeah. And, we'll talk about five.
Well, we got to talk about one thing that does also make it very Japanese, and I don't know if you want to do this after the break, but it was the social links.
Yeah, we can talk about that now.
So I think that one of the biggest aspects and one of the things that draws people back to these games is that you get to make friends with characters in the games. And sure, you have your group of friends and your group of characters that you're the party of your team that you go fighting in the dungeons with. But you could also go out into the neighborhoods that are located in the game and make relationships with like the old man and the old woman that work at the bookshop.
For me, if I could only have one half of the game, the social part of living in Japan a lot and going and fighting, I would take just like a total like Japan sim, just hanging out, what you're talking about right now, you know?
Yeah.
That to me is more unique to the Persona series than the actual like fighting that happens at night in the games. I really love all that stuff, and there's no other game that really does anything like it, and they make it so addictive.
Yeah,
I guess because time is limited, is that the best reason for why you just want to further this relationship? But there's so many options and things to do, just like living in Japan, especially in a city. I mean, you can go eat, but that's going to take up your time. Or you can go bowling, or you can go get a job and make money to buy stuff. But all this takes up your time, so you have to prioritize what you want.
I'll give you a good example of this is if you want to build a relationship, let's say with like a sports star, then you have to do training when you have free time. But you have a limited amount of time, right? So you train for a little while and then it says, oh, you're too tired to train anymore. Your day's over. And then when you go back and you talk to somebody and they're like, wow, you trained all night long, you know, let's go hang out together. And so everything you do in the game kind of builds to these relationships.
And this builds back to the art and the character styles being so cool that you really want to hang out with this person and like be friends with them, I mean, in the game, because they look so cool and sound so cool, but you have to work really hard to get that be accepted by them, you know? I don't know, it kind of sounds lame explaining it with these virtual characters. But, and it's hard, like, you don't just train once and you can hang out with them, kind of like Matt said, like, you gotta train like five times and you're like, you're wasting this precious time where you could be doing all these, again, there's like 30 choices with all your free time. And it's like, am I wasting my time doing this? Should I be studying for the exams that are coming up soon, you know? So I'll get, you know, this reward or whatever, and I can fight better at night. So everything's connected, like Matt said, on so many different levels. And every decision seems so important. It seems like it's going to have a really big effect on you in the game. I think ultimately, does it have a huge effect? I don't know, you know. I think it does with your own story that you're creating.
Yeah.
And your own path that you're taking. Probably, you know, the end result is going to be the same in the game. But they make you really feel there's this illusion that everything you do matters, you know?
It definitely is somewhat smoke and mirrors, yeah. but you could choose, though, who you spend time with. So if you build up one relationship in with, like, a, let's say, like, a classmate, or it's kind of like a dating simulator. So let's say you start dating this girl and you go all the way to the end of the relationship. When you go into the Labyrinth or the dungeons to battle, those characters
are
like
stronger.
They make you, those relationships make you stronger in those battles, and you can
call upon
these personas, which are alternate identities that will fight harder for you if you have these relationships built up.
They have different attributes and abilities, so there's a lot of strategy involved as well.
Yeah, so let's say you only want to hang out with the sports guy, and you build the relationship all the way to the end, then you could probably have really strong physical attacks in the game. Or if you meet somebody who's a librarian and you build that relationship all the way up,
you can analyze the enemy's weakness more, maybe, right?
Yeah, or better at magic attacks or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, everything you do is not really a waste of time. It ends up affecting your overall story, like you said. And I do think that you're right. It is a bit of smoke and mirrors, and sometimes they give you options to choose what your character says. Sometimes I think that has matters.
I think in five, these options, yeah. Sometimes I'm like, you didn't really respond to what I said, you know?
Yeah.
I think using five, again, is a good example. Kind of ending here on, like, what does this tell us about Japan right now in 2017 when this game came out? Five talks about some pretty dark subjects. We haven't really talked about the story at all in these games, or, like, the themes of the stories. You know, it's pretty dark. There's a lot of, like, sexual matters and, like, inappropriate relationships and really, you know, analyzing society in general and
how people can turn a blind eye. Usually it has something to do with, like, people turning blind eyes to, like, societal problems.
You hear a lot of Westerners talking about with Japan, like, them being passive about bad things happening, and thus that's, you should feel guilty about that as if you were taking part in it. But I never really hear a self-awareness of that in Japan. You know, it's a very Western perspective on Japan. But this game, 5, is like the first time I've ever heard Japanese media saying, like, yeah, we should stand up and do something when we see bad things happening to people, and we shouldn't be so passive.
Yeah.
You know, and you should maybe...
I think 4 dives into that a little bit more, but... and 3 is a little more like anime. I feel like it's more of like a... just like a anime story trope, kind of,
that's
generic.
That's my point, is this game, and it's in these 10 years that we're looking at it here, I think tell us something about Japan that maybe in that way it's becoming more Western and, like, calling out people more for doing wrong things or inappropriate things or taboo things or...
But at the same time, it gives you, like, you get bonus points and stuff for eating the biggest, like, Chinese meal doing the very Japanese things, you know, or having a tea party with your friends or eating a hot pot with your friends, you know.
Or you go soak at the onsen at night and you get, like, more energy or health or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that it...
there's these big ideas, I think, that you can, like, philosophical ideas, but there's also the small kind of daily life nuances of just what Japanese people maybe value, you know, or a lot of the options you're going to have to respond sometimes are things that I wouldn't respond to in those situations. I'm like, oh, I don't want to say this. But again, that's like, well, this is probably what a Japanese person would say, and they're very positive, or just saying work hard, or I want to be like, no, I don't want to do this, but the only options are like, I'm going to work harder at this, or I should have done better, you know, and I think a lot of those embody general just Japanese mindsets?
Yeah, I think that like the art is unapologetic in some ways. I feel like the actual game is unapologetic in some ways, where it just tells you, like, we're going to go to a hanami party, like a Sakura Blossom party, or we're going to go to the, yeah, like you said, the onsen and bathe together, or we're going to go under the kotatsu and in the cold of winter, you know? I mean, there's like... If you want a taste of what, like, Japanese day-to-day life is, I mean, I feel like Persona's the best place to start, because it doesn't... Even in the localization, the English localization, they keep in a lot of the Japanese.
Yeah, they don't sit and explain what kun means at the end of someone's name, you know? They kind of just assume that you know. If you don't know, then you're going to go Google that and figure it out. And I like that kind of high expectation of its audience or its viewers, that it's not babying you or editing things out, because how do you explain getting naked with other dudes, you know, to an American guy, or what a kotatsu is or whatever. I like that a lot about Persona. You know?
Yeah. I feel like it was more foreign when I was living outside of the States, when I was playing Persona 3, like, and I saw these things.
Yeah.
But now that I've lived in Japan, I have a deeper understanding, and maybe it's given me a better appreciation of the Persona series.
It kind of lets you know how far you've come when you started playing it before, and now you're here, and, like, you get everything, you know? It's like, oh, yeah, this would have been weird to me before. Like, something so simple now, I've been mind-blown by that, you know, before. But yeah, I think that kind of wraps up, you know, the appeal to a game like this. And I think, like, the controls are pretty easy. You need a PlayStation 4 to play the newest game, or a PS2 to play the older ones, or you need to be, like, a PlayStation person to play these games. So, like, yeah, if you're not a gamer and you have one of those systems lying around to play Netflix or something, and what we said is interesting, I think the controls are simple enough, you know, that especially 5 probably is the most user-friendly to get into. For this part that we've talked about. So if you're still interested, stick around for the next segment, and we'll talk more about kind of more the game element, you know, to see if, you know, it's something that you're interested in. Or if you're a gamer and what we've been saying to you is a little bit redundant and you know Persona, listen to the next part to kind of hear our take on, especially 5, I think we'll talk about, you know, what the actual gameplay is like. But stick around for the in-between for our special segment.
Yeah, we do have a special segment.
So
after this.
Enjoy the tunes.
All right, we're back with our segment, and our segment today is Japanese myths. This is one that I guess it's, you could, I guess we were talking about how in Persona all the characters are very long and tall.
So you're relating it. Yep. Good job.
So this is about being a tall person in Japan. So both David and I are over 6 feet. So we're kind of
like 6'2", right?
Yeah, we're about 6'2" each, and a lot of people have this conception that in Japan, tall people have a hard time. The doors are low, the beds are small, and then the you know, the ceilings are low, and all this stuff, right? And we're here to talk about this myth.
Yeah, and I don't know what you're gonna say about this one. I'm curious if we'll agree.
So, I do think that in Japan, being tall does come with a few challenges. For one, I do bump my head on occasion. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've had this, but in my house, I have one room. It's the pantry. That it's where we have our sink and all of our, like, our washing machine and all that stuff. And when I go into that room, the door, for whatever reason, is a little bit smaller than it is in all the other rooms in the house or in our apartment. And I tend to bump my head on that. And we were looking at a house that we were thinking of renting, or an apartment that we were thinking of renting, and they have lower, even lower doors, and they had put padding up there. And because I think, like, if you were, like,
even if you're
five,
Japanese,
you'd probably bump your head. And so in some ways, I do have to duck down sometimes to get through doorways or entryways, and sometimes even for restaurants and stuff, the doors can be quite small.
Yeah, I totally agree. Luckily, in my house, I don't have any places like that. But I've been to a lot of friends' houses, and I would say more times than not, if I'm at someone's house, there is the, it's always the doorway you're going through, you know, where it can be a bit small.
Yeah, I'm glad. I thought you were going to say, like, no, it's not a big deal. For me, it's more the tallness in the doorways. I think my posture has gotten worse living here in the 4 years I've been here, because just like a fish in an aquarium, I think, is the best example. It can only get as big as its environment. I think I find myself kind of constantly slightly ducking a bit. It could be like, it sounds dumb, but maybe the bowing is, I would say bowing is like 1% and 99%. Maybe not that extreme. Bowing is a very small amount. But I think most of it, yeah, it is like smaller spaces and me being like kind of feeling I always kind of have to duck through things, you know?
Yeah.
That I think my posture has gotten a little bit worse. I don't know if I'm crazy for thinking that.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, my posture's never been great. I think I've always kind of been slouched a little bit. But I think that here in Japan, yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't want to bump your head on things. I mean, I have to do this every day, you know, get under that doorway.
Yeah.
So I'm always, like, it's automatic for me now.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like you just kind of get in this hunch position where you'll never have to remember, oh, I got a duck, you know?
I've been in a few, I mean, we went into a particularly interesting bar the other day, and this bar had like this entryway into this tiny, tiny room.
You walk in, it's a normal bar, and I'm like, oh, this is a small place, and they're like, no, come over here. And what do?
Yeah, it's like Alice in Wonderland. You have to duck down and get through this tiny doorway.
Through a tunnel. It's literally a tunnel.
Yeah. And when you come out the other side, it's this nice, like, velvet...
Big open area, yeah.
Velvet couch, like, room and
stuff. But if
you're
a bigger... Like, Matt and I are tall, but we're pretty lucky that we're slim. But if you're tall and also bigger, too, you struggle to get through that thing, you know?
I was pretty claustrophobic. And there was, like... There was more than one time where I thought, if there was an earthquake, that little entryway is going to be gone.
Yeah,
you know, how are we going to get out of this place?
Yeah.
But so, I mean, space can be an issue, and the ceilings can be low. There are a couple of subway stations that I have to duck my head to walk through like a little section of the subway.
We should make a tall person's guide to Japan.
Yeah,
subway station's safe. Avoid this one.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, and it's usually not a big section, but they'll have, and usually they have it marked like, you know, with like yellow tape or yellow, you know, like the yellow stripes, like caution, you know, watch your head. But that does happen. I mean, and I could bump my head. I'm usually cautious about these things, but I mean, I could only imagine if you were like 7 foot or like a really tall person, like a basketball player or something, and you came to Japan, you'd have like a really hard time. Mm. But
I remember going to department stores or like places like that and looking at furniture and honestly asking Liz, oh, this is like just a like to scale model of like this couch, right? And she, like, it's like a half scale model.
And did she look at you like, with like a blank face?
But I was like, that's so awkward because like, it should just be smaller. Like, this is like almost believable. She's like, nah, I'm pretty sure this is the size of the couch. And I was like, no, there's no way. I think what it was actually was like children's furniture. But even the children's furniture is much smaller than, you know, what you would get back home.
Yeah. I think another place where being tall could kind of change your perspective is when you're going shopping. And it could be just like a...
Like clothes shopping?
Yeah, clothes shopping. For me, I have a really hard time buying dress shirts and pants because oftentimes, especially dress shirts, pants are okay. I get by. But with dress shirts, they're always too small. I have particularly long arms. I know. I'm a freak of nature. But my sleeves never go up to the knuckle. You
knuckle.
Know, like my wrist.
Yeah, my wrist. You don't want to go to your, that'd be weird.
Yeah, well, I'm a freak, I told you. But I'm like a gorilla. But, well, this person's really drunk right now at our Hanami party. but the shirt, yeah, I recently had to special order shirts. So I went to a suit shop, and I tried on a bunch of, like, their dress shirts. I need dress shirts really badly because of, you know, I'm changing jobs and stuff, you know? And so I'm doing a lot of interviews and stuff. And then, but the problem was I couldn't find any shirts that would fit. If they were too, they were, went to my wrist, they were huge in the neck. Huge. Like, I even a tie couldn't fix that, you know. And then if they were too tight in like the chest and the neck, then or if they were right in the chest and the neck, and it would be way too short in my arms. So
are you ready for a segment within a segment?
Yeah, sure.
It's a Japan 2.0 hack. Uniqlo right now. Uniqlo, go to Uniqlo.com. I don't know if you can do it in person. They have like a Uniqlo tailor, which you go in and you can give them like custom measurements of your neck, your sleeve length, and everything. And you, or if you don't want to go that, there's like a medium level of like, yeah, I'm just gonna buy a large, but give me 5 more centimeters only on the length of the arms or whatever, or give me 2 more centimeters here. And I think it's like $10 more than a normal dress shirt to do this. So it's like it's either 39 or 49. So it's a little bit more than the normal one, but. Yeah, a dress shirt.
Well,
that's the one thing you might not mind spending $40 on.
No, I don't. And the suit shop I went to, it was about $40-$45, but they measured me and they measured my arms and stuff, and they gave me this order and they gave me a ticket and they were like, if you want another shirt this size, you know, pick it up. I'm picking it up next week. So
you report back.
Yeah, I'll have to report.
Was it
back.
One of the bigger suit shops? Like, there's.
It's not Suit Select.
Okay,
but
a suit company.
It was a suit. Yeah, it was
one,
like a
one
suit,
of those.
One
shops.
Of those.
Yeah.
But they were super helpful. Luckily, I found out that this woman came up to me and she spoke really good English and she helped me through the whole process, and it was one of the most awesome experiences I've had in Japan, actually, because they were so like patient with me and they really helped me because they could see I obviously couldn't fit in any of their clothes, so. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That was like a really awesome experience. And
so there you go. Hard to find a tall man clothes, yeah. But if you go to a suit shop or Uniqlo.com, you can get some help, some love.
Shoes are hard too. So if you're a 11 and a half or 11 or anything past 28 in European size, you're gonna have a hard time finding shoes. Most places like Adidas and Nike and stuff, they don't
stop at 28.
They stop at 28. So my feet are at 29 or 11 and a half, I guess, and somewhere around there. And it's almost impossible to get like nice shoes. So use the internet, you know, and or try 28s and see if they fit.
Because
you know?
Yeah, I know for Adidas for sure. They definitely care up to 30 in all their shoes on the internet.
Yeah, Matt's talking, on the internet.
Yeah, deal of sending
like
them back.
A lot of
or
times
whatever.
You go in, like, when I go out to like Harajuku and stuff, I want to shop in like the Adidas shop, right?
Yeah.
So when I go inside, like, I see this awesome shoe and I'm like, oh, I want this. Yeah. Can I special order it, you know, and stuff, and they don't
want
to do it.
So if you want something really special, I could see, but like my shoe, right? You try it on, you see I have a 28, you do that in the shop, and you go, oh, I just need a 29, you know, or 28.5.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're looking for some real one-off, one-of-a-kind thing, you know, it's in-shop only, or just to get that instant satisfaction sometimes.
Yeah,
it can
well,
be annoying
sometimes,
to go
like,
online.
My shoes fall apart, or, like, you know, something happens, and I need a new pair of shoes.
Yeah. Tall man problems in Japan. I would say, yeah, at a hotel, the beds are a little bit small, too, and your feet hang off, my feet hang off of them.
Yeah, there have been occasions where I've had that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes blankets aren't long enough
for me. Yeah.
You know, that happens as well. But I will say, for the most part, Japan is pretty accommodating.
It's not as extreme as some of the movies and stuff make it out to be, you know? But it is, I think, an issue, yeah, if you're around 6'2 or more.
Yeah, and you'll experience some of these, but if you're not, don't worry, you'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right, that was Japan 2.0 myths, and I think this myth is true.
Yeah, I think so too.
It can be a little more difficult if you're taller in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll come back and talk a little more about an awesome Japanese game, Persona.
We are back to talk about the other half of Persona that we didn't talk about, which is typically when you go to bed in the games, or at nighttime in the games, and you know, you come back from your job or hanging out with a friend after school, and there's this whole other element which talks about what?
The supernatural aspects of the game.
Yep.
And they're all centered around this place called the Velvet Room, which is like this I guess if you're a Twin Peaks fan,
it's gotta be
a
David Lynch reference, right?
Yeah, it's gotta be a Lynch reference. It's very Lynchian, like dark room where this weird
Igor,
like
goblin-looking
guy kind of gives you like your missions and stuff.
It's very cryptic on purpose, and he speaks in like
riddles and old
riddles,
English, and
you're
that, like all this weird stuff.
But as the game goes on more and more, it becomes more clear what he's talking about. Typically, you're forming some bond with some demonic creatures, you know, that they call Persona. Everyone has their own, but your character always can have more than one, or in the recent games.
Yeah, so Personas basically are like the other aspects of your personality, and they typically, I guess, so like when you build your relationships with the other characters in the games, like when you're going to school or when you're out, you know, at your job or whatever, then it builds these personas and makes them stronger, and they're those personalities. For example, they could be justice. So if you meet like a police officer and you become friends with a police officer, that justice persona will get stronger and stronger. And any like enemies or creatures of that type will become stronger for you as you use those. Because it's a little like Pokemon in a way, where you're collecting these personas, which are basically like different monsters. It's kind of like Pokemon in that regard.
The coolest part, the most unique part for me, though, on that Pokemon equation or formula, is that you can fuse two together, and the outcome is unknown. I guess some parts of it are known. And, I don't know. To me, it's just kind of like a science experiment gone wrong sometimes. You can create some kind of funny, you know, characters. If I combine this one and this one, what am I going to get? And also, they always get stronger, but you might lose some abilities sometimes. And it's a bit of
risk,
kind of scary, risk reward.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you'll get really attached to one.
Yeah, like, it's your main one you use. And then, to get rid of it is a big risk.
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the iconic Atlas characters, like Jack Frost, which is like one of the Atlas, the company that creates these games,
logo,
Atlas. Their logo has this character, Jack Frost, and you get him in every game.
He's a snowman.
And every time I like have to fuse him into another monster, I feel a little sorry. Like, oh no, why did I do that?
Yeah. I have a Jack Frost stuffed animal in my house.
Yeah, you got that in Korea.
So you're doing that, and the kind of story element, the tie-in, because it might sound a bit strange, because so far we've not really said much supernatural, but and like in the fifth one, for example, you're going to these palaces, these kind of, they appear in the real world, but are they there or aren't they? You're trying to figure that out. And they're like a big metaphor for another character in the game, you know, the antagonist, usually their desires, or what they're thinking on the inside, their evil thoughts. And this is like a physical menace, or is it physical or not? You don't know, but it looks like it. And yeah, so they're weird, kind of psychedelic. You're in someone's psyche, you know?
Yeah. In Persona 3, it's like the end of the world is coming, and you're trying to prevent, like, there's a countdown. Like, there's only
so
300
many days
and
left.
So many days until the end of the world, right? 365 days, I think it is.
Yeah. Each one's different, but the themes are kind of the same, you know?
Yeah.
You're racing against the clock for something.
They all have you going into these dungeons that are full of monsters.
Shadows, they're called.
It's, in that regard, it's kind of a generic, almost a generic turn-based RPG.
Yep.
Like,
it's a bit traditional if you know JRPGs. And in this day and age, finally now, I think I like that about it. I think when they're out originally, there was a lot of other games doing that, and I was like, I don't know if the whole fighting part is that great in Persona, you know?
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of my complaints were like the spell names were so weird. I don't think it had to deal with knowing Japanese or not. That's like you always had to memorize what was ice or fire, or what. Not only you gotta memorize the mechanic, but like just the weird vocabulary in the game.
Yeah.
Where now there's a lot of logos and stuff. And I've been playing Persona long enough that I know what they are, but even if you don't, I think it's nice because there's logos that kind of tell you what they are, you know?
Yeah, when you're using Bufu.
Yeah, you know that's ice.
You know it's ice and not something a little more nefarious.
So that's the general element. And like you can only survive so long in these dungeons because you only have enough health or energy. And they're really, really long. They take like in real life terms, you know, maybe 5 or 6 hours to go through. So you have to, again, it's all about the time management thing. So if you're going to go in there, then you're not being able to hang out with people or do your job. So you kind of want to get through as much of it as you can, or when you die in there, you can't save all the time, so it's a really big bummer that you're going to be set back, you know, and you're like, man, I wasted all this time.
The new games are getting a little bit better, but you've had some...
mine just comes down to, like, me being busy and being many other things in my life besides a gamer. And I have like an hour to play a game a day, and that if my hour is wasted and I'm set back to where I was, it's a pretty big bummer that I have to do that again the next day, you know?
Yeah.
But it's not, I mean, if you play games, it's not really a big deal. But yeah, if you don't have a ton of time, the game is not at all like a baby or a casual game. It's a real game, and it tests your knowledge and your strategy, and you feel pretty proud, you know, when you beat a Persona game, because they're very long.
Yeah,
they can be anywhere from like 60 to 120 hours.
I think with Persona 3, I spent 85 to 86 hours on that game.
Depends how much you put into it. There's alternate endings in the game, so there's not just one path always. You know, there's good endings and bad endings.
Yeah. I'd give a warning to anybody playing Persona 4. But like, be very careful. That, like,
that one's kind of hard.
Yeah, you might want to look at a strategy guide, because
I would say 95% of the times I play games, I don't look at strategy guides. Maybe even higher than that. But Persona's the one series where, towards the end of the games, I will look at strategy guides. Just because it come, yeah. There's times where the enjoyment level would just be higher for me to know certain things.
Yeah. Definitely in Persona 4, giving you a tip, everyone.
Towards the end only.
Towards the end, there's a part that, if you're interested, there's a big change in the game, and it could take you down two paths. It's a really big deal, but
you like might I said, the consult. Baby, the games don't baby you. It's pretty easy to get bad endings. So,
and that's part of the story as well. And I mean, you're building your own story as you're going along, because you're making friends with the characters you choose, and then you're also collecting the monsters that you like, you know. And
I would say the stories are a bit, they start off kind of strong, and then they always hit a bit of a lull for me. But generally speaking, not knowing really how 5 is going to go, because I've just started it, they lay down some groundwork, and there's always twists, and there's always... Some things might seem boring, or like, really, why are you developing this so much? But usually there's some kind of payoff, you know, in the end. And 4 especially is pretty well known for having a story that tries a lot of things. Whether it's always successful or not, I think that's debatable. But it definitely isn't, like we talked about before, it's not apologetic, and it's not afraid to talk about controversial issues or have twists. And it's not safe, you know, which is cool.
I mean, I think we're kind of wrapping up right now. I mean, unless there's anything else you particularly want to talk about.
No, like I said, the gameplay at night and stuff is pretty old school RPG, Japanese RPG. It's not that different. I mean, we could really get into it, but I think we've gone on for a bit, you know.
Yeah.
An hour in, so.
I mean, the one thing that is great about these games, I'm going to go and maybe you have one last thing you want to talk about them, but I think that you do build, like, your team. Like, in a lot of Japanese RPGs, you build a team of characters, and they're usually not that fleshed out, or you don't know that much about the characters you're most interested in. And I think one of my favorite parts about this game is that dating simulator-esque system.
And I've never played a dating simulator before. I've always felt a little bit too maybe embarrassed to even really consider it.
Yeah, but it's not always... I mean, you could do dating and stuff in the games, but that's not the core part.
I would say even the platonic relationship is the cool part. But
And the people you meet, and I mentioned, like, it's cool when you see one of those relationships to the end. Like, sometimes it's really interesting, or they can be very emotional.
Yeah. There's a lot of secrets, you know. People at the beginning, it's like, where is this going? Or, I already knew this about you. Why do you keep saying this? But yeah, once you really put the time into it, it's like, whoa, okay, this is unexpected, or this is kind of cool to know.
Yeah. And then the characters that you're traveling with in these dungeons and stuff, they all become more interesting, especially if you spend time with them. And you do get that sense of camaraderie from a game that you kind of don't get in most video games. I can't think of any where I feel like as attached to the characters that I'm playing with.
Yeah. Like, you understand maybe why
they're making a certain sound or wearing something is because they like Bruce Lee, and you know, it takes you a bit to find that out, but then you just look at them and, oh, that's why they did that design of the character, you know. And
yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about, I think things are very well, I never thought about it before the podcast, but everything's kind of connected and really thought out in Persona. I think you gotta have a little patience because it is such a long game, you know. Just put some trust into it, you know. Japan 2.0 recommendation that you just gotta, or Otsutsume, you gotta believe us that, yeah, it can be slow at times, but just stick with it because the payoff is usually good.
I think with the setting, the art style, the story, and the, you're hard pressed to find, I mean, the whole package is polished, and you're hard pressed to find a better, well-rounded Japanese video game in this day and age.
It's always like one of the cool, like, secret games, you know, but I think, like, it's getting really popular now. It might not be much of a secret. But, yeah, I remember hearing about it a lot, and when I jumped in, I just felt so, there's, knowing that there's multiple of these games, you know, in so many hours, it's just a ton of content, and it can be overwhelming, and for me, it felt awesome, you know?
Yeah.
I would love to find another series like that again.
Hopefully there are more series that, that's for sure. But we'll definitely
hold your hand and guide you along our curation kind of these game series. This is the most modern, contemporary, but there's some older ones too, you know, that really represent Japan, I think, in the same way.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to Japan 2.0. We're all over the internet. We're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at Japan 2.0, spell out point. We have a blog at WordPress. So it's japan2.0@wordpress.com. And thank you for all of the kind things you guys have been sending our way and all the comments. And we've been happy to talk with everybody. We're taking some of your suggestions. So if you
let us know if you like this new game series that we're doing, if you have any recommendations on games that you feel might fit in with how we talked about Persona, you know, or if you want to hear us talk about that in a similar way, you know, we have about 3 more series I think we have in mind, but we're pretty open to other ones as well, or even just a non-gaming topic. Again, we're finally getting to the point where we can have like a user feedback kind of drive the content, which for me was always my ultimate goal, you know. So we've been getting suggestions and, you know, doing the ones that make the most sense for us, you know, to do.
Yeah,
and show, which feels really nice.
We've been writing back to everybody that's been writing us, so if you do have something, I mean, don't be nervous, you know? I mean, we just want to hear from you, so.
It honestly makes our days, like, whenever it happens, Matt and I message each other, like, oh, this is cool, this is great, so. I don't know, it's pretty easy to be passive, and Matt and I listen to a ton of podcasts, and maybe haven't always, you know, communicated with the people, but we have with some of them, and I would encourage you to do the same, that. It makes us really happy.
Yeah, if it's this podcast or another podcast, you know, just reach out and talk to the people that, you know, you enjoy their content. And if you like us, you know, please subscribe and write a review on iTunes. I haven't checked the iTunes reviews in a while, but maybe it might be time to check them.
It's hard for us to check here in Japan because it takes us to the Japanese store, not like the Western stores, you know? So I always have to jump through a bunch of hoops to check it, so I don't normally check that. But yeah, we've gotten cool tweets from people who have been listening to us since our Korea days of our old Korean podcast, you know, and just looking into them and their creative sides, you know, and just seeing, wow, our audience is super cool and creative too and the things they're doing.
Yeah, some very unique ones, yeah.
So, building a cool community, and it's cool to get to know you guys too, so I'd love to keep that going.
Well, thank you for listening, and
enjoy the Persona tunes. Yeah.
See ya. Now and then I'm arrival. Round up around, spit out, all over. Rhyme like a rolling stone, calm in the crowd. Watch out the moon, they this too loud. Guess what this sound, it bombs whole ground. So round up, don't ease your pace, cause enemies brutal. Form of the truth, there ain't no truth. You're the only one, one world, one love. But the battle goes on, shadows all mass destruction. Oh yeah, turn down, turn down.
legality, never be charity. The enemy, your buddy, covers whole society. Damn right, mommy's not here, gonna fight all night. Right here, shadow 10 o'clock direction. Seize the moment, destroy the nation. Your rhymes slow motion, give me motivation. Get out now, and then I'm a rival. Round up around, spit out, all over. Rhyme like a rolling stone, calm in the crowd. Watch out the moment, that this too loud. This was this sound, and bombs whole ground. Surround up, don't eat some peace, cause enemies brutal. Form of the truth, there ain't no truth. You're the only one, one world, one love. Zone shadows all mass destruction.
Oh yeah, turn us down, turn us down, turn us down. Never be charity. The enemy, your buddy, covers whole society. Damn right, mommy's not here, gonna.